And we are back. Thank you for joining us for another edition of The Dots. And joined, as always, by the Brain Trust, Mr. Chase Taylor. Interesting day. Definitely some stuff to talk about. Where we sit right now, just before, no, market just closed. Where are we at, Chase? Give us a rundown on the indexes.
Yeah, S&P closed down 0.46. The Q's down 0.5. IWM down 0.6. And Mag 7 down 1.4. Equal weight was down 0.24. Dollar down about 0.25%. Oh, oil bounced more than I realized.
Yeah.
Late in the day, up over 1%. And then gold was up about 0.25% too.
Nice little day for us. Before we get into it, I'll just throw it out there. And I completely deserve the right to reverse myself 100% tomorrow. This is starting to have the feel to me, especially when I look at the charts. This has the feel to me of kind of like almost like a fake bounce back rally. As I sit here today, I will be surprised if a week from now we're not lower overall on the indexes, on the index levels.
The one thing I will definitely say when it comes to that is if you were going to have a bounce back week, it would be the big tech earnings week. That's for sure.
Yeah. And the way they're still acting up against those resistance levels, you know what I mean? Like you're seeing some rallies, but nothing on a breakout side.
Yeah.
And they try to, and then they smack their head on that upper level of resistance. It just, to me, it feels like a market that hasn't found its footing yet. And I just kind of feel like that at this point. Like I said, tomorrow I can completely reverse myself. So especially in this crazy tape. Obviously, one of the big deals, Microsoft's up 5.5 after hours, so they must have done well.
Cloud revenue, I see, was a nice little beat for Microsoft. Their total revenue was a beat. So, I mean, not that any of this stuff would ever not be a beat, but.
Well, that didn't work for Meta, right?
No, they're, and we were talking about this earlier, but I felt like Zuckerberg, like, kind of went out of his way to just highlight anything that was not great. Like, he just sort of tamped the whole thing down, talked about all the reasons that things were not going well. Even talked about the stock. Hey, the stock usually struggles whenever we go invest a bunch of stuff that isn't making money yet. So it was interesting to watch.
I haven't listened to enough of his conference calls to really know what his pattern or what his deal is, but I don't know. When I hear CEOs saying that, part of me is like, okay, I've always respected the CEOs that do that, which is take any bad news and get it out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And then build it into the price and then you can get constructive from there. But I have zero look through into whether that's what he's doing or whether he's painting a picture to have a big earnings surprise later in the year. I don't know.
Yeah, that's kind of one of my thoughts. I mean, it all comes down to can you deliver and make money on all this CapEx you're doing. So I saw something or heard something today that big tech is doing more CapEx than the oil and gas industry. That's pretty wild when you think about it, because you always think of, you know, tech is like so asset light, so, you know, high margin, not having to do a bunch of investment. And you think of oil and gas as like nothing, but every dollar you get, you got to turn around and put it back in the ground. And it's so hard to make money. And yet here we are with oil and gas, not spending that much, you know, making tons of free cash flow. And then big tech is all of a sudden taking their money and putting it not in the ground, but into the data centers. So Microsoft itself builds a new data center every 3 days globally.
Good Lord, really?
Yeah. And those take, I think the average around, I was doing the math earlier on how much power, those require, and it's like a 70 million megawatt hours. There's just some like bananas number.
Well, I don't know that you could build anything that's more energy intensive than a data center.
Oh, they're crazy. Yep.
Right? I mean, you probably got more energy consumption per square foot than any other building in the world.
Oh, yeah. They're shocking for the amount of power they need.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's the computing power and the cooling power, and both are extraordinarily intensive.
Exactly.
The other interesting thing about them, and correct me if I'm wrong, but typically these things are not put on really expensive real estate. A lot of them are in hotter areas of the country.
Yeah, more than makes sense, you would think. But I mean, Atlanta's become a pretty decent hot spot for them.
I wonder why.
It's not cool there. A lot of it's usually power infrastructure, being able to get it for a reasonable price and to understand that you can get it, right? Around us in some areas where you can get tapped into hydro is somewhat popular. But you're right. Like, Texas has a decent amount. It's really hot there. I mean,
well, it's just cheaper land, right? It's just probably, it's an economic equation, right?
I think they would all be built in like Scandinavia or something, but
yeah, no kidding. Or Canada.
Right.
Yeah. That'd be a perfect place to throw those bad boys.
And the U.S. is by far the king, and the DC area is by far the king of the U.S. The data centers.
Shoot, in Canada, all you have to do is just open the windows.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're like our new state-of-the-art cooling facility. Just pop our windows open. Interesting. So the other one to get to, and Meta earnings, I don't really know what to...
Up 12%. They declared a cash dividend.
Who did?
Alphabet. First ever dividend. And a $70 billion buyback. This is all coming in real time here, folks.
Oh, baby. Our biggest position that we sized up. I'm loving it. I'm loving it. So between that and my Meta call, we're even.
There you go.
We're ahead, actually, because Google's our biggest position.
Yeah, exactly.
Love seeing that baby fly. Our
dividend
day
and a buyback.
Our day just got better, my friend.
That it did. Dividend and a buyback for a company that, again, has to do lots of CapEx. So
yeah.
It's interesting. So speaking of that, this is something I've been thinking about is if generative AI is a dud, and I don't mean for the next 50 years, but say for the next 3 years, it just proves that no one really wants it that bad. Or let me rephrase. No one's really willing to pay much for it on the scale everyone obviously assumes right now. Then all these companies building all these data centers and all these billions, trillions of dollars they're going to have to put to work, man, that would be real bad for it's like the one way you can look at mega cap tech and go, well, like, what could knock these companies over? And it would be that, like, turns out, no, we got like kind of like all the auto industry went all in on EVs. And then 2 years later, they're like, oh man, no one wants those. What happened? If you get a repeat of that for AI, for the big tech companies, like, man, that would not be good. And I'm not saying that's what's going to happen.
No, I know exactly what you're saying, because I'm on board with AI. I think it's going to be transformative, all those other things. And I'm not trying, when I say this, I'm really not trying to find a chink in the armor. I'm really not. Yeah. But I'm listening to what these companies are saying, and I'm looking at reality on the ground, and it just looks to me, and I think it looks like to other people, something that we've said from the very beginning. I think you're going to see amazing things developed, but to the point where you're actually generating serious revenue from consumers, I just think it's going to take longer than they think.
Yeah, that's my exact thought and position. And plus, like, you know how the media works, right? They're going to highlight the bad stuff. And there is some terrifying stuff coming out of AI. There's people that have used like the digital like girlfriends, and those drove them to commit suicide, and like crazy dark scenarios from AI. So like those will catch headlines, even if it's a total outlier, and I'm sure they are, but those are going to catch headlines, and you're going to get a blowback, pushback. And like, so it's just, I feel like investing wise, it's all getting priced. Like, oh yeah, this is definitely going to take over the world and make shocking amounts of free cash flow. And like, probably, but you might have to trip and fall over before you get there.
They will
go from being applauded for all this CapEx to harshly judged for this CapEx if it doesn't go great in the next, you know, I say you give them 18 months, and if they don't start proving stuff, investors are going to get skittish.
Well, that was going to be my point that I was going to say about Meta and Zuckerberg. I think when you sit back and just read that, you know, read what he said, read the minutes on that call, I'm left to believe that he's just got scar tissue from the last time, which was really funny, by the way. Like, if you look at the last, we dodged that bullet. It was one of those deals where we made the right move and it ended up being way more right than we thought it was going to be. Because the thought was, okay, he's announced this $20 billion of CapEx. It's going to start hitting it's going to show up in Q1 of, what was it? I can't remember. Was it 21, 22? I think it was 22. And our attitude was, hey, let's sidestep that and ride Amazon instead. You know, same basic idea. And then watching them just get obliterated. So I think what he's probably trying to do is prep the market more for what's going on.
Feel the scar tissue.
Yeah.
I'm talking about usually when we make these kinds of investments, our stock doesn't do great.
But the flip side of that was such from somebody that was really following Meta at that time, that it was so shocking watching the market reaction, because you're like, guys, he told you for a year this was coming.
That's the market in a nutshell, though, yeah.
And more so in this market than any other market I've ever seen. It's really odd. I don't know whether to attribute that to retail involvement. I don't know whether to attribute it to algo or high frequency trading. But I've watched more companies walk into really obvious things. And I'll admit, it's tripped me up a couple times.
It goes both ways, good and bad. Great things that happen to companies that they went out of their way to tell you about for, 6 to 18 months. Then it happens and everyone's like, oh, look at that. That's crazy. Let's buy that. Like,
yeah.
What do you mean?
Why? Nothing changed. Right? Yeah. And you're just used to things being more priced in. There's been a couple times, and I can't pull – I know there have been, though. There have been a couple times where I've bought things knowing that there was some bad news there, but that everybody did and it was priced in. And then the quarter hits and the bad news knows that everybody knew was coming hits, and the stock gets hammered and you're like, What are we doing?
Yep.
Everybody knew that.
Which is – it's great, though. I mean, it's a wonderful source of potential edge and alpha and it's crazy to call it edge because you're just like, you just have to listen to what they tell you.
Well, but it's what we talk about all the time is I think sometimes you can be too smart by half, which is, especially in a market like this, it's going to throw you some layups. And when they come, you got to pack them down. It's hard enough as it is. The interesting move in gold today.
Especially gold miners, yeah.
Gold miners. And that's the one for me, because if this is a real move in gold, you should see days like this. Newmont, I think, got it off. This is another one that was obvious to me, not Newmont in particular, but I will just tell you guys, there's going to be idiosyncratic issues with miners, because there always is. Always. But as a group, when you're looking at gold prices where they are and oil where they are, these things are priced for brutality. I mean, and that's just not the reality on the ground. That is, of all the things in this market that I wouldn't want to be short at this moment, it'd be miners.
Oh, yeah.
Just because the fundamentals, by and large, again, you're going to have in the idiosyncratic issues and one-offs and all that kind of stuff. But by and large, their earnings are going to be really good. I mean, just book it. Right? People are like, well, they're irresponsible. No, they're not. Not anymore. Have you seen what those things have been through over the last 12 years?
Right.
It's kind of like, I kind of feel a little bit similar about them as I did energy stocks 2 years ago, right? Where you're like, okay, these things are priced for death. And all the reasons that everybody still says they're priced for death don't exist.
Yep.
Management teams have become much more efficient. They're not, I mean.
And some of them too, like some of the individual names, like they have like, done shocking amounts of brutal capex and opening a couple of big new projects. So like the last, 5-7 years, has just been awful. They've just been lighting money on fire.
Yep.
And now like they have all that out of the way. So all those comps are looking good because they're not just spending all your money. And now all of a sudden they're producing right as, the widget they produce just goes parabolic. Like it is just a wonderful setup for some of those names. And you can tell like, exactly what we're talking about. If you just look at quarter over quarter and like year over year stuff, if you looked at some of those names and their data, it'd be like, there's nothing special here. But if you knew like all the stuff that's going to roll off their books, if you just looked at
that,
you realize like, oh, well, give this one 6 months and see what those comps look like.
Yeah.
And you can tell like market doesn't care because A, market doesn't care about miners to begin with, but B, to the extent that it does, it especially isn't trying to do the real work on individual versus individual names. So
no, and in that way I think the market sort of imitates the economy in general, which is the economy is all about liquidity, so is the market. Like that's what it's paying attention to, and it's going to make for frustrating periods of times. But like you and I have been talking about, and I think the gold miners are a classic example of this, if you've got patience and you're willing to underperform for a period of time, which we'll keep reiterating, right? To outperform, you got to be willing to underperform over periods of times. But the one thing I will say increasingly is this market's giving you some outstanding value plays.
Yeah.
It really is. There's some serious value in certain areas. The other one, and like you mentioned it earlier, is the market continues to be completely enamored with the tech side and is completely ignoring the commodity side that is necessary to facilitate that.
Yeah.
Right. I keep looking around and everything I see, people are like, oh, EVs, copper's dead. And I'm like, guys, EVs are going to be here. They're not going away. Okay. Everything I see in the world, I think copper, 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 copper. I mean, you know, and I'm not familiar. I don't know that industry nearly as well as the gold mining industry. Obviously there's a lot of crossover and a lot of similarities. And I don't know this, but I will guarantee what I do know is that the numbers are probably pretty similar with copper miners as gold miners in terms of net new mine openings over the last 10 years. There just haven't been any.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is we're kind of right in the midst of opening some monsters, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Friedland deal.
But after like you kind of have that pig in a python of like some big mines opening, you just look out the 5 years after that and you're like, what do we do? Like it's rough after you open a few big ones. And even this year, like you look back a couple of years ago, this year was supposed to be a pretty nice surplus, and it's not. It's going to be a deficit. So like whenever you only have a few years of surplus to look out in the future and they start vaporizing into deficits, man, it's tight, you know?
Yeah, it is. It is. And there's still not a lot of capital flowing into that area. So I don't really think that's the other thing you got to,
and they take a shocking amount of time to develop and open up.
Oh yeah. That's the other thing. People act like you just flip a switch.
Yeah.
The other thing too, is you got to look at the world as far as climate change, everything goes, like that side of it is getting increasingly more expensive, and that is not bearish for the metal.
No, not at all.
It's actually bullish.
Basically every mega trend you have needs copper. I mean,
yeah, I don't see,
you look at wind energy, like the amount of copper that goes into that is insane, especially the big offshore turbines. Like, whew, it's a lot of copper.
You know what's amazing to me? When are we going to begin rebuilding the grid here? Like, I'm just sitting there.
We've started, to be fair.
Okay, the grid to me feels like, remember Christmas Vacation when he goes to plug in the Christmas tree? And he's plugging in the outdoor lights, and he goes to the garage, and there's just that.
Oh, yeah, rat's nest.
Yeah, the rat's nest extensions. That's what I feel like our grid is here. You know, it's like that. It's like a rat's nest.
By the way, the best Christmas movie ever. I don't care what anyone says.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a beaut, Clark. there's some other funny quotes that are not appropriate to say on the air. But what else do we got? What else of note happened today? Well, the we've got to talk about the GDP report. GDP came in softer, but walk us through that. You don't seem too alarmed by that, but there is one aspect of that GDP report that you and I both noticed independently and discussed that I think is something that, and you'll explain this better, but you can never take too much from one quarter of a GDP report, right? Like it's just,
for sure,
it's a random loud number, a lot of noise. But I do think that something in there is interesting because it caught me by surprise. So run us through that.
Yeah. So just, on the headline number, it was 1.6 when people were expecting 2.5, and
it's a big mess.
And and like Goldman was expecting like closer to 3. I thought it would beat. So I was expecting 2.6, 2.7, really. So big miss on that. But if you go into the real final sales number within it, like it's kind of a better proxy for just the parts of growth that aren't, you know, weird, like the net trade and government spending and stuff like that. So it kind of nets out that stuff to look at like, what's the consumer doing here? And that wasn't great, but it was fine. Like there's no like recessionary, like sketchy looking stuff within this. But at the same time, the market seemed to take it seriously that GDP was under 2. In fact, the Fed's target for what they call trend growth is about 1.75, and we're at 1.6. So that's notable. But the price component within the core PCE that goes quarter over quarter. So it was 2% the last couple quarters, which helped the Fed pivot, right? Like, hey, we just went 6 months with inflation basically where we want it. So like, let's fly the mission accomplished banner and let's get out of here. Let's pivot.
That's always worked so well.
Instead of being 2% like the last couple, this one was expected to be 3.4. So everyone knew it was going to be warm, but it came in at 3.7.
Wow.
And if you strip out, you know, COVID, you have to go back to 1990 to get a quarter over quarter core PCE print that was that high. So Q1 had a lot of inflation, like full stop.
Well, and like you and I were saying coming into the year, right? If you want to know where that is, I think it's just reflected in stock market being at new all-time highs.
Yeah, the feed through there is just, it's just not properly respected.
It's sure not. And I keep preparing for it to break.
Yeah. Someday it will.
Yeah, someday it will. But I don't think in this cycle it's going to. The feedback loop is just so, you know, you had Bitcoin hit a new all-time high in the first quarter, stock market hit an all-time. It seems very simple, and it's been a very good mile marker for us to follow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so what I thought was so interesting about that, and like we already said and prefaced it with, you can't read too much into one quarter. But that is sort of what a stagflationary environment looks like. In my thinking, and again, as always, feel free to disagree. In my thinking, I've always felt like stagflation was the real problem, because it kind of renders monetary policy somewhat useless, doesn't it?
It definitely makes it awkward for them, especially if it feeds into unemployment. Because then their two mandates are just kind of going head to head with each other, where unemployment's up and you're like, well, we're supposed to, you know, fight against that. But then inflation's not low enough, so they're supposed to fight against that. So now they're kind of serving two masters, which is just impossible for them to do. But so far, you know, hey, having a quarter off of growth, not the same as having unemployment start to really pick up. I think at the moment, if unemployment started to pick up, they'll be like, oh, cool, we can pivot. But it would be very awkward for them if unemployment started to pick up and inflation just stayed sticky. And that's not to say I would expect that, because I wouldn't. I don't.
But, I don't either. That's why that kind of caught me off guard.
But that's what makes it, like I said to you this morning, that's what makes it a good thought exercise, is because no one's thinking that, right? So that means if it happens, what are they going to do?
However, but one of the things, and you and I have had this conversation before, I will say this. If you take monetary, in my opinion, I could be wrong, but if you take monetary policy to its logical conclusion, right, and you bear it out, eventually stagflation would result. Eventually. Now, how long is eventual? I don't know, but you know what I mean? Like, if you treat every problem, I just look at these things sort of like, you know, medical situations, right? If you treat every problem with the same medicine, you're eventually going to get a problem that doesn't respond.
Right.
And that's stagflation. Like, that's the issue. The other thing I think it's really interesting is, again, it's one quarter. You don't want to make too much of it. But that quarter is yet another hole being blown in the idea of a 2% neutral rate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just...
It's fairy tale land.
Yeah.
And like you and I've said, I think the only way you get to a 2% neutral rate in this environment is in a recession.
Yeah. I mean... I just think they're just wrong about that. Like, yeah. there's really just no two ways about it to me. Now, I mean, I guess you could argue like growth coming in a little weaker here. They might argue like, oh, see, we told you like growth's going to come down. It's like, yeah, you kind of did, but like you also said inflation was going to come down. So, the natural rate of inflation, if anything, was going to make it clear that it's higher than they think. I mean, that's it. So. The policy rate at 5.5, you can argue on Q1 maybe it's slowing the economy a little bit, but you surely can't argue that it's whipping inflation.
Wonder why add that as another thing to a really complicated board here. You know, because that surprised me. I think I would have thought if you'd had GDP come in any lower than expectations, inflation would go right with it.
Yeah, and typically they're pretty decently correlated.
Yeah,
that's what, like whenever we had the stagflation in the 70s, like everyone's mind was blown, because they truly back then it was kind of viewed as like impossible. Like they had to like be joined at the hip. And that was when we learned like, oh, well, maybe not necessarily.
I think the 70s is a good analog and a good thought experiment to look at, but I jump off the ship the minute that people are like, "Oh, it's going to be just like the 70s again." And you're like, what was the birth rate in the 70s?
Yeah.
Wasn't it above 3?
Oh, we're like more than half. Like it's more of a 50% decline in since then.
Yeah, and then that hit.
Granted, like we've had a lot of immigrants lately, but.
And that birth rate ran smack dab into the oil embargo, and you just had all of these other issues.
Formation of boomers, like coming of age and spending tons of money.
Yeah.
To like build things and form their households, buy stuff.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Like, we have that with the millennials right now too. And I think that's part of the heat we've seen is like, millennials aren't rich, but like they are at that age where they're like, they're getting married and they need to buy homes.
They're going
to
live their life.
Right.
Yeah. They're going to live their life. You and I have talked about
speaking of living your life. I think we see that with new home sales and existing home sales in the last week, mortgage rates are brutal.
Yeah.
And new home sales. And then today existing home sales were, I mean, not great when you look back at history, but compared to the last year, compared to rates, like it's pretty nice jump. And I think it's like a capitulation of like, we were waiting for a 5% mortgage rate, but we're not getting it. So like, we're just going to move. Like if we got to eat cat food to live in a house, then that's what we're going to do. Although cat food's probably pretty expensive these days too.
Yeah. Maybe you should just get rid of your cat. Yeah. It amazes me how consistently complicated this whole.
It's a wonderful puzzle, isn't it?
Oh, that's a nice way to put it. It doesn't feel wonderful most of the days. Let's see. What have we not covered? Rates popped up a little bit today, but nothing crazy.
Yeah. And the front end actually, I mean, it was a decent pop, but like you say, on the long end, you made new highs for the last few months. On the short end, you kind of just, like on the 2 years, you're just stuck just below 5%.
10-year bond is creeping ever closer to that 5% level that I was talking about.
Yeah, and the 20 years even closer. The 20 years at 4.93. So it's one day, you know, one juicy day from hitting five.
Where's the 30?
The 30's at 4.81, up about 4 basis points on the day. So the 10's at 4.7.
Are we still – so we're more flat than inverted at this point, aren't we?
Yeah, there's been some flattening lately, especially like today. I mean, the two's 10's – well, two's 10's stayed pretty flat, but two's 30's –
Don't want to read too much into this, but it is interesting to me that you go from the most steeply inverted curve of all time to where you're flattening now, and it also coincides with a weaker than expected GDP report. And the reason I say that now, this is also exactly why I don't expect it to play out this time, because it's just such a different environment. But that's the trend, right? The inverted curve is the precursor, and then the flattening of the curve typically is the move right before a recession starts.
That is true. Yeah. I do think the curve's signaling value is heavily muted at this point, but as a lot of data that I was leaning heavily on last year is clearly just out of date. But with that said, another data point we almost forgot to mention is architecture billings. So architecture billings, which is what it sounds like, architecture firms, you know, providing data, obviously a leading indicator for construction, because that's where you go first before you build something. That is at recessionary levels and falling pretty hard, pretty fast. It's in contraction for both homes, like residential, and for non-residential, worse for non-residential. And it's going kind of, it's straight down. It's like a pretty ugly line. So I do think, this is a dead horse on the show that I've completely brutalized repeatedly, but I think that just again is another indicator that construction and construction employment are not going to do well, call it the next 2 years. So I still think we can get a recession largely on the back of construction rolling over. Looking at that, it makes me feel, you know, unless that bounces significantly,
even with government spending staying where it is.
Yeah. I think that's the question in it is, does like all the IRA and CHIPS money and plans, are they enough to just backfill it all to where like it doesn't fall enough? Or can we still have it? So typically where we're at in the cycle, if you use a bunch of other metrics, like you've already gotten hammered on construction because of what happened to rates and the yield curve and et cetera, et cetera. And right now you're like barely in any sort of construction drawdown whatsoever. But I think that's because all that stimulus led to a bunch. Plus, you know, on the household side, like the only game in town is new homes, like, cause no one's listing old homes. So even there you've had a giant surge, but maybe that's about to tap out. Like maybe we've broke ground on enough of these data centers and all the warehouses are done being built from the crazy boom in 2020 to 2022. Like those all roll off and those construction crews don't have a chip factory to go work at. I mean, all these apartment buildings that every city is just surrounded by, whenever they finish up, those people, you know, they call to see if they have another job for a house or an apartment. They're like, no. And then like, oh, well, I'll just go work for the government. I'm sure they're building a, a new chip factory battery plant or something. They're like, oh yeah, no, we don't have one of those right now. Like, well, that's what recessions look like.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe we don't get it because maybe, like you say, maybe the fiscal party is ready to keep that train running. But if
what,
not,
well, it's just an interesting thought experiment. What do you do if you go into a recession running 6.5% deficits?
That's terrifying. I mean,
I don't know what you do there.
Right. So
do you go to 8?
Oh, I think in a recession, especially if the recession is joined by asset prices falling,
oof,
I think the deficit runs up to 12-15% of GDP.
Good golly.
And I don't know how you sell all that debt. Like, I really don't. So that's why, like I've said over and over, like I don't think the long bond is a good play even for a recession, like, cuz I think there's a decent shot that what I just explained like hurts it, like, or at least keeps it flat. Like, normally you get a giant, you know, run in duration, where this time it may be like, maybe you get the knee jerk, like, yay, and we're going to get a recession, so I'm going to go up 40% for you. But then after, you know, some of the budget stats come out and some of the auctions come clunky, people are like, well, wait a second. Like, I don't know if I want to play in this game.
Yeah, that's...
Granted, the Fed will buy a bunch of it, but...
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to at some point, like we said. And that to me, long-term, I feel like that's like the most, you know, sturdy thing that you can hang your hat on is, what did we say? What was our call? Like, within 10 years, Fed balance sheet's going to be between 40 to 50 trillion?
Yeah, I think... I don't even know what the time frame is. I just know in my career, they're going to euthanize $50 trillion in debt, I think. I think, yeah, that's where we're headed.
It's hard to look at the deficits and the debt and not get there.
Yep.
So anyway. All righty, kiddos. Well, that's another interesting day. And we will, of course, be back again tomorrow with some more follow-up. What do we got coming up?
We have PCE tomorrow and UMISH, personal spending, personal income. So some
Core PCE, though, it's pretty easy to piecemeal that together, right? Isn't it?
Yeah, typically not a big shock because people take the CPI, PPI data that kind of feeds into it and usually get close enough. Tomorrow, it's expected to be a 0.3 print, I think it is. Expected to be at 0.3 and year over year running at 2.6. So last month, we were at 0.4 and came in at 2.5. So expected to bounce a tiny bit year over year, but fall month over month. I think it'll be somewhere in that 3 range. So to me, the question is really more of a, is it 0.31 or 0.38? Like, kind of thing, you know? Or a 0.228 or a 0.34. Like, how that rounds out is going to be the big thing.
Well, I guess we'll find out soon.
Yep.
And that comes out tomorrow, right?
Yep. And the other thing I'll be watching close is UMISH, the five to 10 year inflation expectations, which been stuck around 3, and I don't know, something just tells me they might, if not this print, pretty soon start to move north.
I thought we were writing UMISH off. You just can't bring yourself to do
UMISH
it.
Is the dumbest data in the world, but that one part of it, like, I want to know the long-term inflation expectations. And the reason is everyone's become all at the Fed has gotten real gloaty about the fact that long-term inflation expectations and all these surveys has not come unpinned.
They're
inviting it.
The Fed will gloat and press anything or any piece of data that fits their picture at any given time.
Which is why I feel like they're going to get this one good and hard and then have to pick a new one.
Yeah, well, they will.
Yeah.
The one thing those guys do, they've got – you talk about moving goalposts. They've got their goalposts on wheels.
Yeah.
And they just push those babies up and down the field. Anyway, all right, guys. Well, thanks for joining us again for another episode of the Daily Dots. Like I said, we'll be back again tomorrow to give you a breakdown of that PCE number, including what else happened in this crazy world and economy. Until then, you're listening to Know Your Risk Radio podcast. Download and subscribe at knowyourriskradio.com.
The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Investment advice cannot be given without a client service agreement. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Trek Financial, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor.